Welcome to this week's edition of the It Feels Right podcast. It's Rob and Stone. Stone is here. Thank the good Lord. We are going to talk about a lot of things, particularly his good looks, his incredible commentary, his exceptional GM ability. We are going to talk about some tip of the week, which is
court positioning during third shots for the player hitting the shot and exciting. The player hitting the shot's partner. So really good stuff here. And a little bit of a Selkirk Red Rock Open recap. A light recap.
Real light. Let's go.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
Ladies and gents, before we hop into the show, I do want to talk to you a little bit about Selkirk's amazing line of pickleball nets. And whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, Selkirk has the perfect net for you. When you choose a Selkirk net, you're not just choosing any net, you're opting for the official net of the PPA Tour, where excellence meets professional play. With Selkirk's line of nets, you can play pickleball anywhere. Selkirk's range of nets caters to every player's needs, offering budget-friendly choices for casual enthusiasts and premium options for those with a competitive edge that are looking for more of the pro-level net. So either way, you're ensuring quality play for all levels, and I've got a Selkirk net for myself, and let me tell you, it's a game changer. It's all about playing on your terms wherever you are, whether it's the driveway or on the PPA Tour. So if you love pickleball as much as I do and we do here at It Feels Right podcast, check out Selkirk's pickleball nets. Get the freedom to play anywhere and everywhere and elevate your game with the net trusted by the pros. Selkirk's got you covered. If you're interested in getting a net of your own, go to selkirk.com/collection/nets and we'll link to that in the show notes. You can also find this link in the description of the show. But let's jump into this week's episode of It Feels Right with Robin Stone.
I don't know if you saw it, but I had to do I went so we used to call it, like, when you just would go, like, in college to the bar by yourself, it would always, you would just call it, oh, so you went psycho solo to the bar. I had to go psycho solo on the pod last week, and I will say it went 30 minutes, and it was 30 minutes of me just talking to myself, and it was, you know, I would say as a typical person, I don't think many people would describe me much as a talker per se, even though I have a podcast and we do this podcast.
They wouldn't.
I don't think so. Like, okay. in general, right. Like if I'm out, like, in public, I wouldn't say, like, oh, you can never get that guy to shut up. So talking for 30 minutes straight.
That's me.
Yeah, we are different in that respect. So to talk 30 minutes straight without much of a pause, just like looking at myself on this computer, talking and kind of droning on, was a challenge, Adam. So I am glad that I'm talking to you and not just myself.
Yeah, welcome back. I had a little travel there after that championship Sunday, so it didn't quite make our Monday morning time slot. So did you at least talk about me at all or bring me up in any way, shape, or form?
Talked about you, talked about tips. I droned on about results. I almost fell asleep to my own voice, but it was, I'm going to keep those to a minimum. Those aren't very fun. And the reason we do this podcast is because it's fun and more fun with you here.
Well, thank you, Robert. I appreciate that. Yeah, I've done a couple, me, myself, and I, solo commentary. And, you know, we already discussed me being a talker, but it's not as fun. You don't have someone to piggyback off of, bounce things off of. It's just you out there, you in the streets, and that's a tough place to be sometimes.
Unless you do the world's shortest pickleball podcast like Matty Pickles does, and then it's fine because then it's just it's boom, 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 done. But a 30-minute go was aggressive.
Yeah, Matty Pickles, he's deep in the game. I always see him on Twitter. He's just playing some 4-0 points and with the furry dog on the court. That's all I know.
Yeah, I like, you know, Matty Pickles is one name. I like Little Klitschy.
Who's Little Klitschy? Tim Klitsch?
No, Matty. I just think that's a more apt name, Little Klitschy. Because people don't know he's a Klitsch.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know he was a Klitsch.
No, he's Tim Klitsch's son.
Oh, I didn't know that at all. I always see Tim Klitsch in the videos just destroying these poor kids. Just angle it, just like hitting shots just so they can get to it so he can continue to move them back and forth. You know, that's pretty quality stuff there. And that's what that screams pickleball in a lot of ways, where the old man is just carving up the youngsters. So I appreciate those little clips on Twitter.
I think that would be like a really good YouTube channel, is like having, call it like a real, like I want like a 75 plus year old kind of senior pro type guy or gal that goes to like public parks and like, and plays dudes with their shirts off, like frat boys, and just toys with them. I would watch that. And then also talk, I would watch that for hours on end. So if anybody wants to pursue that at the age of 75, I will support it. I will watch it. I might even come and be there for it.
You might be one of those shirtless frat boys that is at the park. Maybe? No? Okay. All right. Gotcha.
Maybe.
Maybe. Did you do anything exciting this weekend, Robert?
I'm up in Bristol, Tennessee. It's I like to joke about it with Mollen. It's like, because, you know, when I'm not here traveling, I am in Ponte Vedra Beach, and it's a condo there, which you can walk to the beach. It's like a 20-minute walk to the beach, probably 15-minute. And so that's our beach house. And then I'm in a little studio unit up here that they put me in. And this is the mountain house. So we have a beach house and a mountain house.
I would say this, look at you, Ra.
This is a 350 square foot mountain house, but hey, size doesn't matter. It's not about size.
Yes, yeah. That's right. That's a technicality. You have a mountain place and you have a beach place, and that is a lot of respect to you for that.
You're reasonably
close to me. It's like 5 hours.
Yeah, not too far. We got to get you over here for I help out at a facility up here that's actually hosting a PPA in August. In Bristol, Tennessee. It's called the Bristol Sportsplex. They have 6 indoor courts right now, 3 tennis courts. It's a cool facility. They have a really fantastic gym upstairs. They have a salt room, an infrared sauna. They've got a banging bar and grill. And they are building on the outside, kind of in conjunction with the city of Bristol. It's a privately owned place, but they're also the city and the private business are working together to create this really great outdoor facility, which is going to have a 6 stadium court. It's going to have like a stage because Bristol, Tennessee is the birthplace of country music, and going to host a lot of just cool events here. The PPA is going to be here, going to try to get a bunch of tournaments here in 2025. So yeah, I come up here. I help out kind of with the strategy side and getting this place up and cranking. And it's been a lot of fun. But yeah, Mollen came up this past weekend and we kind of played a lot of picky. We went on some walks, explored the mountains a little bit, and it's just a good place.
It's a good place.
We have Greg Dow visiting this weekend for a clinic that we're hosting here. And I don't quite think that Bristol, Tennessee is ready for Greg Dow, but he's coming anyway. So,
man, I'll tell you what, he is slim and trim, Greg Dow. He has tightened it up and must be doing a little off court work, because I saw the man. I couldn't even believe it. He looks like he's in good shape.
He does. And you know what? I have watched him play a little picky. He's playing some good picky and he's moving really well, which I think has been a problem. Like, I don't think there's anybody that I've hit more slow roll drops on for clean winners than I have Greg Dow. So
and in so, the cookie jar, yeah.
I don't know if that's possible anymore because he's looking slender, lean, quick. He's just he's gonna be your prototypical pickleball player at 6'4" and lean, and I wouldn't say dynamic and explosive, but he's leaned it up.
So
watch out, ladies.
Well, did you say a salt room? What is a salt room?
That's, yeah. I It's a salt room. So
salt room.
I don't quite know, but I have used it, and I've absorbed the salt. I felt it. It's it actually is a little intense in terms of you walk in. It's got some nice ambient lighting. It's got a straight wall of Himalayan salt blocks, which, you know, those pink salt blocks. But that's not the kicker. The kicker is you look to the right as you walk in. On kind of like hanging on the wall is this little filter thing. And to get the salt room started, you basically dump this pharmaceutical grade salt into this little filter. It goes in, does its little thing. You go into the room, you sit down. Like you sit in there. And there's four chairs. You can go in there and chat with somebody. You can go in there and do a little work, read, write, whatever you want to do. And it gets like hazy in there because the salt's filtering in and kind of like a mist through the room. I don't know. It's supposed to help with like your immune system, like, allergies, sinus, like stuff
Epsom
like that.
Salt bath, maybe. A little bit of an Epsom salt bath. A little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, last question, Robert. I got one more for you.
Yeah, hit me.
Infrared sauna. What is that?
Yeah.
No idea.
It's a sauna with lasers, I think. I don't know.
Oh, so we got no steam.
There's no steam, but it gets very hot. But you don't get as much of like the pure sweat that you do with the steam sauna. But it's supposed to, the lasers are supposed to help with stuff. Allegedly.
Okay.
It's cooking you from the inside. I don't know. Like, people keep trying to tell me what it does. I just know it makes me sweat. I like being hot for a little period of time, and it feels like it does something. And yeah, it's, but people swear by it. I will continue to do it because it's nice.
There you go. It's short-term stress is good for you, Rob. Whether that's heat,
that's very
or
true.
Cold, short-term, long-term stress, very bad. Short-term
very
stress,
bad.
Good. So
that's
my tip of the day right there.
Whew. That's a layered one, too. That covers a lot of ground in a lot of different areas of life.
Yeah. Well, Robert, I had I scrolled through a little bit of social media this morning, and we had the classic bash the commentators post. You're not immune from that, no matter what.
We should,
if you are in the public eye, it's tough to win. And I don't like seeing, of course, granted, it's myself plenty, but I don't like seeing my colleagues get ripped apart on social media. It's a little bit sad. A lone tear rolls down my cheek, you know?
Yeah. Who's getting ripped?
Well, it's just a mix. It's usually a mix. I don't think the keyboard warriors
usually
really discriminate.
It's usually the play-by-play, though, right? Because they have a little bit of a less intimate knowledge of pickleball. And
I think that's a fair statement.
They
yes.
do they do this voice, and another third shot dropped by Colin Johns.
It's like the produced. The produced voice versus just like your natural voice. And I think people don't like that.
Yeah. I think that seems to be a recurring theme, and there is those diehards and those pickleball purists that, you know, they, if you say something incorrect about the game of pickle, they're going to let you know about it, and they're not going to be thrilled with that. So, I wanted to say that's sad a little bit.
But we can use it for good entertainment, because I think that's always fun, especially like comments about yourself. I know, whatever, like people will always say stupid stuff, whether it's what you did in a match, how you played, how you like the decisions you made. And obviously it's always very easy to say that from watching a stream and behind a keyboard when you're not actually on the court playing, right? It's a lot harder to make snap decisions in the moment, what in any sport that you're playing. And it's always easy to make judgments from behind a TV or a computer stream or whatever. But also the same in commentary, like you see it, like you know, this is kind of like your new frontier of like you dialed in pickle, and now you're trying to dial in commentary and get better at that and improve and hone that craft. And it's not so easy, but what is fun is people being mean, and then also reading, like, have a segment where we read these comments and like post them on the screen of what they're saying. And
that's not
like
that's not bad actually.
A mean comment.
I remember
segment.
They used to, on a late night talk show, they used to have celebrities reading tweets or like social media posts about them. And that was pretty funny. And I mean, in fairness, I think it does kind of get bundled in with being in the public eye. So it's technically part of the job to get ripped on, you know, because most people work in their office behind closed doors. Maybe they work in accounting. You get a number. You get a number. That's the right answer. There's no right answer in commentary. And I think it goes the same way for the players, too. Now, granted, the players are making more money than we are, so maybe they should be ripped on more than the commentators. I don't know. But I do think that regardless if you like it or not, if you were in the public eye, you kind of have to take it to some degree, even though it does hurt your heart just a little bit.
Yep. It goes back to one of my favorite quotes. I don't know if an MLP owner, I don't know if she's still an MLP owner. Is Brene Brown still an owner in an MLP team?
I haven't heard her name pop up, but there's so many that maybe she just got passed by.
But I know she was super involved with like organizing calls early on. Her and James Blake. I don't know what the status is now, or if what that looked like when all of the stuff was going down and they were trying to align with the PPA and Dundon. But she has just a great quote on. Actually, it's not even her. I don't think it's her quote. It's like Roosevelt or somebody, but it's the man in the arena quote. And it's like, anybody that's in the public eye, like you said, that's actually doing stuff, easy to rip on, but they're the ones that are actually doing stuff.
There you go. I was maybe thinking of something a little more philosophical, but that was perfect. That was simple. To the point.
Well, the quote's much more philosophical. So,
okay, I thought that was the quote. Okay,
No. That's Rob's version of the quote. We're doing stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're doing stuff. But I'm just gonna.
Yeah,
that's right. And as I said, it's baked into the job. But here's just a couple things that you know myself and my colleagues are kind of going through this commentary process. So, it's a pretty tight squeeze in terms of time. I watch some of these other sports like baseball. They're just telling a story, you know, have all this open time. It is very difficult, especially with certain players in terms of their pace of play and how quickly they're going point to point. Yeah. Federico, when he's winning is a perfect
bro.
Relax, Fed.
No, I love Catherine, the fast pace. Yeah.
Yeah. Catherine Parento too. But I mean, I'm talking like I am coming up with ideas. And maybe only like 20% of them are time sensitive enough. So I'm like coming up with ideas of things to say and then just having to scrap them depending on like where the ball goes in between points. Or if the ball knocks off the tape and goes to the side of the court over by the ref, maybe, or the video board, then maybe I can actually say something more significant. But if it doesn't, sometimes I just have to eat it or cut off my thought early. So not talking during the point, which is pretty difficult when you're constantly doing that throughout the day.
And, a hot take especially, here.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't say that's a hot take. I mean, that's just kind of what's happening. And I don't always do.
No, I said I've got a hot take on this kind of subject. And
bring it.
I think so. All of this talk about not commentating or talking during the point all came from when Dave Weinbach was doing all the commentary.
Fair.
And correct. Not only did people not want him to talk during the point, but they also didn't want him to talk before or after the point.
That's a fair statement, too. So maybe we're getting a little too carried away with it, huh?
Yes. I think talking during the point is absolutely fine. I think it's what is not fine is talking during points that are critical. I think talking during points that are, you know, 3-1-2, absolutely
whatever.
Okay. But, you know, 991? Nah, let's watch. And we can talk in a little bit. But I hear you on the pace and how quick you have to get in the tidbits, but I don't think, yeah, I think we're getting carried away with it. I think we can talk during points, and if people don't like it, the same way people don't like football commentary, just turn it down, you know?
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, if I'm also, I think it's probably what you're saying during the point. If you start a really good thought and it leaks over towards halfway through the point or during the point, whatever. But if I'm, you know, just saying inside and forehand for the 918th time of the weekend, describing the action, then I could probably squash that and not say that during the point. But I'm with you on timing as well. I've been, you know, it's not, I've been trying to be a little, or even having some in-between points silence late in those points when it's 10-9, 10-10, like you're talking about, or in a big moment. Yeah, you know, it's a tough balance, but I like that. And I think early on, as you were mentioning, or maybe a match that's a little stale, you know, talking during the point a couple of times is probably not an issue. But some people just really, really hate it, like really hate it and will bash no matter what. So
yeah, that's with anything, honestly. But I would say I would be curious on, you know, what you guys think. Let us know in the comments below. And if you haven't already, please like and subscribe. It helps us keep the podcast rolling, helps Selkirk, who is hosting the show, helps us grow subscribers and followers and lets us keep doing this. So appreciate you. And just to be clear with Dave Weinbach, I like Dave a lot. One of the more entertaining matches I've watched this year was the senior pro men's at the US Open. If you guys haven't watched that, watch it. All Tops of Genius, Rick Witskin, the grunting, it was one of the more entertaining matches I've watched this year. And I think Volkov is a national treasure. He needs to be protected at all costs. I think senior pro pickleball, and I've always said it, and people have thought I was just bashing on senior pro. I just always wanted it separate from regular pro. I just didn't like the intertwining of, you know, one pro match on stream, one senior pro match on stream. It was bad for everybody. It extended days to be really long. I love the fact that senior pros have their own platform now and have NPL and are still getting, you know, live stream coverage at the US Open, because I really had a blast watching it. So I think I'm just misunderstood, Adam.
So you're the guy that doesn't like to talk very much. Is that where we're bringing that back up from the beginning of the pod? Cause you just, you've gone for it a couple times since then. And I mean, I'm not upset with you at all for it. That's kind of what we're here for. But I just wanted to clarify what you had mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, that you're just not a talker. You're not a talker.
If I'm in a public scenario with one-on-one, I can, yeah. You just bring it out of me. Thank you. Make me feel whole. You're easy to talk to. You are so welcoming and inviting that I feel comfortable. And that's not on me. That's on you. And that's all credit to you, Adam.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. But I actually would. That was good that you said leave a couple comments about some commentary preferences. I am completely okay if you mix in something I do well and then you bash me right after. I would love there to be some balance there. But if you just want to rip on me, that's fine too.
We will read them next week.
That's right. But I also think that it's a bit of... I was talking about this kind of describing Pablo and Fed, who have played their last tournament together. They've had some nice runs, but they're breaking up and they're looking for new partners. I'm sure they already have their new partners established. But I think it's similar in commentary as well. It's things that don't bother you early in the relationship or the first handful of times that you hear a commentator. If you've heard them for the 812th hour, even the things that you liked early on start to bother you. So I think, you know, I shouldn't really say this considering it's my job, but having a hair more variety or mixing in a different person, maybe like a Rob Cassidy, who was at this last tournament on Grandstand, and I think he was on Championship Court a bit too. But having just, you know, a couple different shifts, or, you know, taking a tournament off if you're the lead commentator every so often, I think probably freshens the product and freshens kind of what people think of your style and how you do it. Because let's be clear, if you're doing a progression draw and you're doing Championship Sunday, that could be 25 hours in the same weekend of you talking about pickleball and the same players, and that can get stale even if you're good at it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think people also get desensitized to your greatness. I think they just get accustomed to having incredibly high-end commentary week in and week out, and I think the people lose appreciation for what you actually bring to the table. So I think, yeah, taking a week off and then coming back the following week, people are like, oh my God, dude, that's what he does. That's what we've been missing this past week. And thank God he's back.
I think that was a good general statement, not talking about anyone specifically, Robert.
Directly about
that
you,
is
Adam.
Well done. And that's, I know, I figured that you were, but I think that is more for anyone as opposed to me as well. But I thank you for those kind words, Robert, as always. You said something similar with the GM coaching type situation. I'm not so sure I fully agree with you with everything you said, but it warmed my heart to the nth degree. And thank you once again.
I call it how I see it. And I think the people are itching to get you back in the commentary booth after this past weekend.
Well, they only have to wait a couple weeks. I'm doing PPA Atlanta after the MLP. So MLP, I'm only doing coaching. So I'm doing no commentary for the MLPs, but I'm going to be doing quite a few for the PPAs for the summer and the rest of the year, of course. So hope you like it. If you don't, I'm probably going to be in there for at least 2024. So you're just going to have to deal with it.
Who would you compare yourself to in the commentary game? If we were looking at other sports, would you say you're Vern Lundquist?
Oh, God. I know who Vern Lundquist is. I haven't watched as much sports as I used to aggressively in my teenage years and 20s. So I'm not sure who I would compare myself to.
I just think Vern's the GOAT.
Is there anyone else that says Twig and Berries on the broadcast?
That's
one of my favorites.
I say Twig and Berries
do that
a lot too. Courtesy of you, you've really
it's fun.
You know, opened my world to Twig and Berries. It is super fun. No, he wouldn't say that, but I would say he's just like the GOAT of commentary. Maybe you're like a John Madden. Maybe you are
what about Johnny Mac? I like Johnny Mac.
Yeah. I think that's a fair one. Absolutely. I think who I want you to be, and maybe who I want to be when I get into the commentary game, is the most legendary play-by-play guy of all time. He's a huge homer. He was the UGA he did UGA commentary for forever. Passed away. Larry Munson, the great Larry Munson. He just had some of the most iconic calls in, I want to say, college football history, but as a Georgia fan, I would say that. But he just had stuff like, you know, we were playing Tennessee in Knoxville and, of course, winning, and it came down to like the last second pass to get a touchdown for the win. He says stuff like he stepped on his face with a hobnail boot and broke his nose. Like, just random, like, says random stuff like that, but was just, like, the ultimate homer, so biased, and I think, I just love that, right? It's like, yeah.
That's you.
Yeah, that's who I want to be.
Gotcha. Vern Lundquist is the old guy that's balding.
Yeah, I think he just did his final, Masters.
I like
him. Oh, you know who else I think you could be? Chris Fowler, dude, because he has variety. He can do a tennis major. He's epic at college football. He's well-rounded, just like you are, Adam. Like, you know baseball in and out. You do fantasy baseball. You are Moneyball, essentially. So you could do baseball you could do baseball commentary. You could do pickleball. You could do poker. You could do tennis. That's why I think you might be Chris Fowler, because what can you not do?
Thanks for buttering me up, because I'm about to get bashed in the comments for all the garbage commentary I do. So this is nice for you to build me up before the Warriors take me down. This is lovely stuff. And Robert, we had a great moment at the Beer City Open last year.
Oh,
we had a great moment together on the mic. It was Dylan Frazier dove on the concrete, and we had a nice line. You were talking about how we don't dive on the concrete, and I go, Dylan does. It was, I mean, that's magic. That's magic.
How many
right
moments
there,
we
Robert.
Could have.
So I'm. Oh,
should
I can't
I just,
wait for
just
our next opportunity together.
We hit the road together, or what?
Yes.
Okay,
that's right. There's a little bit of buzz about doing a Manning cast style, which is a more
laid back.
I've been
pitching this forever.
Yes. So Dave would like to do that. I would like to do that with him, and I would like to do that with you, and just have a more laid back, possibly on grandstand, bring a couple people in, players, have some stories, talk over points aggressively, because I'm not allowed to do that on championship court. That sounds pretty interesting to me.
I think that's what it should be. Sure. Like, I don't know. If we need the official broadcast on championship court, sure, for whatever. I still think pickleball should try to be different than.
And there's another third shot drop.
Yeah, like, who cares?
That sounds like me. Thank you, Robert.
You would never,
was that
Adam.
Me? Like I said, you can always say inside and forehand 118 times a weekend. You can only say it so much.
I'm just pouring a little cold brew coffee right now.
I need some thesaurus work. Hey, yeah, get that caffeine. You're probably at 250 milligrams right now. Let's get that up to 4. We need it. Manning cast. Man, I haven't thrown the football in a decade.
Been throwing
be
the pigskin with Mullen the past couple of days, and she's got an arm.
Oh, that didn't look like pigskin.
It's certainly not pigskin.
It didn't look like pigskin.
It's probably
rubber. Looked like rubber to me.
Blue Water Beach, not quite sure where that's at, or if it's even real, but.
Well, Robert, we're on 30 minutes of rambling about whatever, which I respect, and I'm glad that we have, but maybe we shift over and move on to the tip of the day.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, on my ramble last week, solo, psycho solo, I talked about force and the importance of them and how they're not talked about enough, and people can, you can make a whole career off force if you're able to keep people back, especially nowadays when serves are so big and it's more common than ever to not get to the kitchen line on your fourth because you got to be fast. So where do we want to go from here, Adam?
So I think we talk a little bit about thirds. And as the player hitting them and as the partner watching their partner hit the third, just a little bit about court positioning and how much real estate you should take in given situations. Okay, so for me, of course, I have, when you hit the ball, especially as a bit of a higher level, but even the lower levels as well, you can read that situation very well. So you can track the ball with your own eyes and you have the feel of hitting the shot also. So I think it's much easier when you are hitting it to take the appropriate real estate. When your partner is hitting the third, I really like to be slightly staggered. I like to be a couple feet in front of my partner who's hitting a third, whether it's a drive or a drop. And that way I'm in optimal position to gauge the trajectory of the shot. Okay, I think it's easier to do that if I'm a couple feet in front of my partner. Now, they hit a terrible shot. I can hop back and bail back to the baseline. They hit an okay shot. I can hold my ground, take a step or two forward. They hit a good shot. I can get all the way in. And that's kind of how I think about it and how I like to read the trajectory of my own and my partner's shot. And I think it's extremely important because there's situations for everything. Holding, backing up, taking one step forward to incrementally get to the kitchen line or just get all the way there, which is clearly the best case scenario.
I think, dude, even at the pro level, I get it's one of my biggest frustrations when playing. It happens mostly in mixed, I suppose, when I am hitting a third. Is AJ? Let's get an AJ appearance if
AJ, come on, bring him in here, prof, just for a second. I hate to break up your thought. I know it was going to be earth shattering stuff, Robert, but let's just get a little quick little AJ.
Come here to me. We're coming to you. Oh, look at this sucker right here. Oh, hey there,
little
Mr.
Angel.
AJ.
Little That's Angel. Robert. Hey, buddy.
That's Robert.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Bubba.
I can't wait to see you.
Bubba, what's happening?
Yeah, AJ, did you know you're Kohler? Named after AJ Kohler?
That was lovely.
That's what I tell him every day. AJ, not Kohler. Robert, we're gonna do that randomly until he embraces you with an aggressive 8-2.
Oh, that's incredible.
8 teeth now. Smile. He usually stares at people for a good several minutes before he opens up. So we're gonna work towards that. Anyway, continue your thought on this third shot.
So when I am hitting the third, and so I think you made a good point, Adam. I think not enough people watch their partner's third and trajectory and then make a split decision on whether to move forward and put pressure on their fourth or whether to move back and put yourself in a better position for a fifth. And what I don't think people look at is also the return, right? Because I know if I'm hitting the third, I know off of their return whether or not I'm going to hit a good third. My third is if it's typically based on the return on whether I'm going to hit a good one or not. And if it's like sitting up a little bit and kind of three quarter court, I know I'm going to hit a pretty good roll drop. And my opponent probably doesn't off of that return. So as I'm hitting it, and I know if it's sitting up and I can get under it and I'm in good position, I just say go because they're not going. And I think maybe that takes more chemistry and takes more time on court with somebody. But I think it's a good way to do it is say go, because there's nothing worse than knowing you're going to hit a nice roll drop that's going to be dipping at their toes and your partner's back with you. You know what I mean? And that happens all the time. And I'm like, why
totally
am I still
agree.
Saying go? Why am I still saying go?
It's like,
watch and just crash. Just do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with those roll drops specifically, get some reward for your risk. You know, those roll drops, they're lovely. They're wonderful. And they can be consistent, but they're a hair more risky than some of those more floaty drops. So if your guy misses it, he misses it. But if he doesn't, you're probably going to get a weak reply. And also with that penetrating deep return, sure, players can hit nice drops off of that, but we're talking about a huge percentage difference. We're like, maybe you're going to hit a great drop when you're behind the baseline on your back foot 15-20% of the time. So that's a pretty reasonable hold situation. And if you're three quarters court stepping into it, that could be 85% or 90% situation. So you better use those kind of predetermined percentages to adjust your court positioning. Don't just have the same reaction to the same returns. I think that's a good note. And then also the last piece of information is reading your opponent's paddle, court positioning, their body posture when they're at the kitchen line. So you read the return, then you read the quality of yours or your partner's third shot. And then once you have a read on that third shot, you start looking at your opponent's. And all these little bits and pieces of information allow you to take the proper amount of real estate, whether that's the whole shebang or whether that's holding and defending or whether that is going to the midcourt to know that you're going to be in a good position for a fifth so that you can get to the kitchen line on the next ball.
And another thought that just came to mind, and I'm thinking of times where my partner is kind of stuck back when we're in a position to move forward and be aggressive. And I think one of those scenarios is, let's say I'm on the left, I'm serving to the person on the left, and they're unwinding the stack. That person's typically going to return down the line to give themselves enough time to unwind the stack and get to the right side of the court and cover their position. One of my favorite shots, and I don't know why more people don't do this or practice this, but it was my favorite thing to do in tennis. When I played tennis, my coaches would always say, like, you watch Rob warm up. And I played, just for context, I played number one at UNC Asheville, singles and doubles, and had winning records. So I wasn't terrible, but I wasn't a great tennis player by any stretch of the imagination, but I was decent. But I would play junk tennis. Like, coaches would always say, like, if you watch Rob warm up, you probably think he's like the 7 or 8 guy on the team. Like, I played trash tennis. I would slice short, bring people to the net. I'd hit stupid little passing shots. I'd hit topspin lobs. I just played junk. Like, by any stretch of the imagination, looking at me, I looked terrible, but I would win. I had good volleys. I was serving volley randomly. I had a good kick serve. But in tennis, I would stay very tight to the baseline. I would not get pushed back. I wouldn't be like this big grinder. I would take everything on the rise. I would short hop stuff. I would just like own the baseline. And on this serve where I'm serving in pickleball from the left to the left, and they're unwinding the stack, and my, let's call it mixed, and my mixed partner's on the right, they're returning down the line. I want to take that ball because I want to take it on the rise. Ooh, good save. I want to take it on the rise, and I want to take it and roll it hard cross court. But my partner, oftentimes, since I'm coming to the right, they just kind of go to the right and back up a little bit rather than pushing straight ahead, if that makes sense. But I think that taking it on the rise, like, that's a thing in pickleball that I haven't seen that much of right now, where people are really taking a nice forehand early off the bounce and rolling it and pushing it. And you can do that now, but people are letting it bounce, come up, and that's giving your opponent time to get over there. I haven't seen as many short hop rolls like that, but it's super possible and more advanced, obviously. But for those of you at home, if you start working on the short hop roll, you're going to take a lot of time away from your opponents. And pickleball is all about taking away space and taking away time.
It's the same as hitting it hard, Robert. Hitting the ball with pace, taking the time away, exact same thing. So I do think that this is not a special skill set, but a tough shot to execute. But if you have it, I think that there's an insane amount of benefit. And Robert, I think we're the same person. I played tennis the exact same way. I would serve and stay back. I would chip and charge. I would take shots on the rise. I was often returning 5 or 6 feet inside the baseline. I do think that kind of all court game strategy translates very nicely to pickleball. So I think that you were probably a better tennis player than me. I was very okay, but not bad. But I do like that skill set transitions over to pickleball. So
I think it's a very drillable shot. Just have balls coming to you straight down the line on the forehand side, and just work on moving from the left side of the court, like the serving position, and shuffling over, hitting a forehand dipper cross court on the rise. It's a super drillable shot, and it's so valuable.
And I like what you said about the right side player's court positioning when you do that. Almost everyone goes back. If you got a studly left side guy who's trying to create something with that short hop roll or a big drive, go a little further off to the right or go forward at an angle to the right so that you can crash back to the middle of the court and be aggressive. Because how many times do we see an earth-shattering drive at a ton of miles per hour, 1 inch over the net, and they just awkwardly bunt the ball, but no one's there to poach it? So the point goes back 100%. To neutral. So no, if you got an alpha over there and you're a right side player and they're just driving the heck out of the ball and rolling drops with aggression and jamming up their opponents and creating weak replies, you better better be to the kitchen line to pick some of that stuff off, or you're just hitting risky shots with no reward.
Because what happens typically in that scenario, Adam, is let's say I take that short hop, I take it cross court, I'm following it, right? Because I'm following that, and I'm covering my side of the court. I'm taking that angle in to cover the left, and I have to watch line because they can still volley there and put it there. But what happens typically is that person will try to pick it up and they'll bunt it, like you said, back cross court. But my partner is still back or slower to get to the line than I am. And that nice drive goes to waste because they weren't coming up. So it's, partner positioning, especially on thirds, is incredibly critical. And I think that was a great tip to bring up. But I would expect nothing less from you based on your knowledge of the game and based on your commentary ability, your coaching ability, what you've done for the Hard Eights as a GM and Major League Pickleball. It's I don't know why I'm even.
Man, I'm expected. You're expecting.
I don't even know
comments.
Why I've been surprised by these by the tip of the day. You know.
You're expecting this chat to be brutal on me. Keep fluffing me up, Robert. Also. Robert, I'm just saying, I think that some of the skills that you bring to the table from an analytical perspective and understanding the game might fit nicely with a Major League Pickleball team or possibly something along those lines. So if you're going to toot my horn, I'm going to toot yours as well.
You know, I'm a mercenary. I'm available for contract. I work in the private sector. I'm available at any time.
There you go. And Robert, we did have a little pickleball this past weekend at the Selkirk Red Rock Open. Maybe we do just a light recap of some of the enjoyable storylines and quality play that, of course, was in St. George, Utah.
I would like to say, I want to give a compliment right now. And this one's not to you, sadly, Adam. But one thing that I've really liked following is pickleball.com, especially like when I'm looking at doing the show and looking at the recaps of the weekend, going to tournament results. It's just structured very nicely. What I also like is that with one click during a tournament, I can, instead of going to brackets and clicking draws and results and navigating that whole nonsense, I can just go to pickleball.com and I see the ticker at the top that shows all the scores and the results of what's happening that day. And like, what I also really like is seeing the times of when the next match is going to play. So I just think pickleball.com has been really, really good and useful in respect to following matches and tournaments that are going on. And that's just a shout out to pickleball.com and how solid it's been, you know, using that, because one thing we've missed for a long time is good user interface and UI and UX on pickleball software and websites, and it's been money. But so yeah, just shout out there. But going into some of the results, we've got the women's doubles final, Leah Jansen, Tina Pisnik, straight game victory over Callie Smith and Anna Bright, 1-7 and 7.
I mean kind of wild. I mean, they even starting in the round of 16, maybe not total household names, but Cass Hogan, Martina Frantova, they beat 11-1, 11-4. Then they beat Millie Rain and Zoe Wong, 11-0, 11-2. And then Lena Padigameta and Tammy Emrich, which have been playing well lately, 1-5. And then 11-1, 11-7, 11-7 on Sunday. That's a pretty dang smooth through the draw. And I know we're missing a handful of names in some of these tournaments because there's four in a row, but that's really well done from Leah Jansen and Tina Pisnik to really just handle everyone with ease.
And Leah played before that gold medal match in women's doubles, Leah played the singles final on the women's side against Mary Brasha, won the first game, ended up dropping it in three in a really fun match to watch. Mary and Leah both played fantastic. Mary's backhand is filthy on the dead run. She kind of hooks it and is able to hook it down the line where it's like, it looks like the trajectory is going wide and it hooks right back in the line. She just played fantastic. Leia was dealing with some blood sugar stuff, which, you know, as a type 1 diabetic, I'm always so impressed with how deep she goes in these events and how big of a toll that must be on her body. So big props to Leia on kind of regrouping after that singles match and handling the dubs.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that's actually one of the slivers of time that I did watch was those big up the line two-handed yep. backhands on the run from Mary Brosh at the end of game three. And that literally was the difference. Where I think it was at least two, if not three or four, in that kind of clutch section of the match. So yeah, I agree. And of course, yeah, and I can only imagine. I mean, pickleball is hard if you're dealing with anything mentally or physically. You gotta shoot some respect to Leia Jansen, who, my goodness, beat Georgia Johnson 11-4, 11-0 in the semifinals. And then you mentioned Mary Brasha 11-9 in the gold medal match. This is quite a score line too for the bronze, as Caitlin Christian beats Georgia Johnson 7-11, 12-10, 12-10. So a lot of parity in the men's game. Some of these ladies are stepping up too. And I'm excited to see some of the not necessarily newcomers, but new faces on Championship Sunday once CP and Anna Lee come back and are in the mix also. And if we can, you know, see a few more upsets on the ladies'
and
side.
Just in terms of new faces, we had Alex Trong who made the move from the APP to PPAMLP with an exclusive contract this year. And I believe she grabbed her first medal, taking bronze and mixed with Connor Garnett, which is a huge result for her. That's a big win. Mixed, you had, what was the mixed result? Ben and Etta took it, right?
Ben and Etta in a really, unfortunately, the games got a little more lopsided as that progressed in the gold medal match. It was four games, 14-12 for Anna and James in game one, and then 11-7, 11-8, 11-1 for Etta and Ben in the gold medal match. So pretty doozy of a game one, but not comfortable, but fairly easy in games two, three, and four for Ben and Etta, who have a lot of comfort with each other. And then you did mention the Alex Trong and Connor Garnett over Martina Frantova and Andre Daescu, 11-9, 11-9 in the bronze medal match. Yep. So that's good stuff for those teams. And yeah, I don't care if there's a couple players not there. You get it in a BPA tournament, you're doing pretty good. So nice job for Alex Strong to sneak in that bronze. She's going to be in the. I mean, she's going to be there. You talk about the exclusive contract, so it'll kind of be interesting to see who she ends up partnering with and if she can have any more deep runs. As you know, she is a. She's a little person. She's a little player, but she's very young. So I think there's a lot of age-related upside there. If she can, kind of improve the physicality a little bit with some strength, she's got a pretty good bit of power for how small she is.
And obviously still super young and a lot of upside. And, I think we'll only get better. And good competitor. She's pretty dialed. And I think she can bring some more positivity on court. Obviously, you know, I can relate to this. I'm the same way. Just you want to win so badly that sometimes the negativity leaks in and it goes over to your partner a little bit. So I think once she's able to kind of dial that in, she's going to have even more success. But yeah, great weekend, great result. On the men's double side, you had Andre and Gabe playing Dylan and J-Dub. Andre and Gabe took out the Johns with a third game pickle, which don't know if that's happened, but I watched that third game. And yes, Johns were incredibly frustrated. Gabe played very aggressive. They all paid off. If his attacks are on, he's going to take it to anybody. I don't care who it is. And then in the gold match, they were not on, and he pressed a little bit. In game one, they lost 13-11, and he was super patient. Games two and three, he was ripping balls, trying to speed up off the bounce, and it wasn't paying off. He was missing a lot of them. So, you know, you kind of live and die by that speed up, and sometimes it's going to pay off and you're going to get a huge win. And other times, especially against Dylan and J-Dub, it seems like they've played quite a bit, and I don't think they're ever going to be favored in that, and they're going to lose. They lost this one in straight games, and I think Dylan and J-Dub's hands are just too solid.
Yeah, really good. And they know. I mean, Gabe's known for, sure, he just aggressively goes high and hard a decent amount with his attacks, but he also has some slippery, deceptive stuff. And that none of that is going to be fooling Dylan and JW, who have played, like, you know, 2,000-plus hours on court with Gabe Tardio. So with their hand speed and their skills and their familiarity with Gabe, that's a really tough matchup for him. And he's a young buck, too. We just talked about Alex Strong. So, you know, when you're playing your buddies and two guys that you have a ton of respect for, that's not the easiest hurdle to overcome as well. So, yeah, I agree. But, they beat Connor Garnett and Christian Alshon, incredibly good team. They beat Federico Stackford and Pablo Tejas 11-5, 11-3, and then, of course, beat the Johns with a game three pickle. That's that's quite a run for those two.
And you mentioned Fed and Pob. Their last tournament together, the result doesn't surprise me a ton. I watched that match. Conditions were utterly insane out there. The wind looked incredibly aggressive. Fed actually called the ref over and wanted to check on wind speed to stop playing, and they kept playing. But Adam, I'm not going to go into it today because I think I've gone into a lot. But indoor pickleball. Because I don't think there's any wind inside unless, like, windows are open or there's a garage that's open. Or, like, if there's those big fans above that are spinning really fast, like a tornado. But I think mostly indoors there's not wind. And I think if you don't have wind, you have pretty high-quality pickleball. And you don't have these issues of you know, players running down and whiffing balls. And I think you have high-quality stuff. And to my knowledge, I don't think there's any sun inside either, but maybe if there's a glass roof or something, you might have some sun and some glare, but I don't think there's too many glass roofs out there. I think indoor pickleball pretty much doesn't have a sun, and usually the lighting's pretty solid. You can see pretty good, and the lights don't get in your eyes that badly. And like I said, I don't think there's any sun. So no sun, no wind indoors. Seems like a pretty good place to play this game of pickleball. I guess we'll have to wait and see if there's more indoor tournaments and indoor pickleball. Maybe not, who knows, but you know, I think those are some pretty valid points and I stand by them.
That might be your hottest take ever on this show. No sun or wind.
To my knowledge, I'm okay with being wrong on that. Maybe if somebody shows me a facility where there's sun and wind, fine, I'm okay being wrong, but that's just, I haven't seen it yet.
So there you have it. We're right about that 1 hour mark, Robert. Anything else you would like to talk about?
No, I think I would like to hear what the listeners and the viewers have to think about everything we've talked about today, specifically Adam Stone and what your belief is on him. I've shared my beliefs of Adam Stone today. I think we're lucky to have him in the world of pickleball on this podcast in the commentary booth as the best GM of the Hard Eights in the game. I'm excited to see his career develop from here. I'm excited to see if ESPN calls soon. Let us know your thoughts.
There you go.
Until next week, Adam, where you will be right alongside me again, because I'm not doing Psycho Solo anymore. We'll talk to you then.